Hello, and welcome to the Leadership Loop podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about the incredibly important subject of self-leadership. If you do not lead yourself with clarity and conviction, then everything else around you will fall to the level of your neglected self-leadership. Our conversation today is with Dave Bushnell, who owns a business to help nonprofits, churches, organizations develop leadership culture. He's also worked for the Global Leadership Network. He's been a local church pastor for 18 years, and he has helped us here at Life Center developing our leadership culture. I know you're going to really enjoy this conversation because I did. Let's turn to it now. Dave, I am so excited to have you on the Leadership Loop podcast, not only because you are a friend, but because you are a leader in my life. You are helping our church with some consulting work. And so I'm learning from you as a friend, as a leader, and I'm excited for everyone else to get to learn from you as well. So as we jump in, I'd just love to hear, what are your passions around the subject of leadership?
So I have two primary passions around the subject of leadership. One of them is leadership culture. And what I mean by leadership culture is I'm done talking about leadership development because the research shows that leadership development does not work. So we've had a double the amount of expenditure in the last 15 years on leadership development. So it's almost a $20 billion industry per year in the U.S. And we don't have anything to show for it. And so there's plenty of research that shows. So for example, there's a survey of 14,000 HR professionals and they were asked, hey, how would you rate your bench strength in your organization? And they rated it very poorly. So we're doing something wrong if we're spending this much money on leadership development and we're having this many HR professionals tell us that our bench strength, our leadership pipeline is not good.
Yeah, that's not great.
So I'm done talking about that. And I'm now talking about leadership culture. And leadership culture means what are all of the surrounding elements that an organization, a church, a nonprofit, a business needs to have in order to make sure that leadership learning actually happens.
Okay. So you would make a distinction between leadership development, leadership culture, and in your own words, what's that distinction?
The distinction is leadership development typically refers to the impartation of information. Leadership culture is an environment that produces a surplus of leaders.
Interesting. That's really interesting. Okay, we'll talk more about that.
Okay, good.
What's your second passion?
Second passion is self-leadership. Okay. So years and years ago, I heard a statistic that said that, you know, we've heard this, that leadership is a 360-degree endeavor, right? So there's leadership down, and that's leading people that are on our teams. There's leadership laterally, leading others who are in similar roles to us. And then there's leadership up, leading those to whom we are accountable. And so, okay, I can wrap my brain around that.
Yep.
Then this information dumps some statistics into that in the form of percentages, saying that 5% of leadership is leadership down. Now that's
counterintuitive.
That's counterintuitive. That's all we ever talk about is how do we lead our teams? How do we lead the people below us? And then 25% is leadership laterally and 20% is leadership up, leading those to whom we are accountable.
Yeah.
Now there's probably some people that are doing some quick math and saying,
oh, what?
We're missing 50%, right? So we can quibble about those percentages, but the one percentage I won't quibble about is that the remaining 50% is self-leadership. So before we step foot on the leadership playing field, how have we led ourselves?
Yeah.
That's 50% of the ballgame.
Yeah. So how do you respond to this statement? One of the greatest enemies to your own leadership is you.
I think that's very, very accurate. In fact, we are the hardest people we will ever lead.
Can you tell me a story of when you can choose, okay?
Okay.
When either you succeeded in self-leadership and you're proud of it, which that's a good thing. I think knowing your strengths and being like, hey, this was a great moment for me. Or when you failed in self-leadership. Could you get a pick?
Which story
would you like to share?
I want to come up with a failure one for sure, because that's where we learn. That's where we grow. So here's an example. I have a distinct memory of one of our kids, and we are sitting at one of these little stations waiting for some appointment that has the bead that you push up into.
I love that thing, man.
Yeah.
It keeps me entertained for hours at the doctor's office.
Hour to this day, right?
yes, to this day.
Exactly. Yeah. So I am a leader in my son's life.
Yeah.
And so we're sitting there and he's, you know, doing the push thing and he says, hey, Dad, do this with me. And, you know, so, okay, I'm there doing the push thing or whatever. And my brain is completely not at the table. It's not with Easton at all. And it's because I had not self-led to see the opportunity that was right in front of me to be with my son.
Yeah.
And so I hadn't figured out how do I take all of these other things that my brain was gnawing on and put those in a box for a moment and lead the person right in front of me. And incidentally, there's nobody else that could do that leadership in his life. Mm. Right?
That's,
I mean, as his dad.
That's such a great example because that's practical, everyday. Self-leadership isn't just about like achieving some crazy goal of getting your PhD. It's about being with people.
That's it.
And how you lead yourself in the presence of others and how that makes them feel and what impact that has on them. So that really, I mean, that story frames self-leadership in such a way that everyone sees the importance of it, I think. And everyone can apply it now and go, okay, I want to improve my self-leadership. Because I know that story made me go, I got some room. I could do better. So let's zero in on self-leadership. I know that you have tools that you've used that you recommend to others. Can you share those tools with us for growing and improving our self-leadership?
Yeah, for sure. So one of the questions that I ask leaders is, what fuels your tanks? And usually they quickly like have this look on their face like I have three heads or something, like they have no idea what I'm talking about. And then they're leaders, so they recover and then they give some kind of a response or that kind of a thing. But at the end of the day, I think what that shows is that we don't know the answer to that question. Mm. What fills our tanks? So I think knowing what fills our tanks and what drains our tanks is usually where I start the self-leadership conversation. Now that takes, the foundation of self-leadership is self-awareness. So are we aware of what it is that fills our tanks and what it is that drains our tanks?
Yeah.
So if I'm working with somebody to identify that, I'll usually help ask a set of questions like, what are your hobbies?
Yeah.
And what is it that you're doing when you completely lose track of time? Hmm. What is it that is an activity or activities that you do that when you do them and you're done, you feel like a really stronger person, you feel really good.
Yeah.
Those types of questions, if we can just brainstorm all those types of questions, it gets us more in touch with what it is that fuels our tanks.
Yeah.
And of course, we got to be aware of what drains us as well. Now, there are all kinds of things that are draining tasks that are normal in our lives.
And necessary.
Yes,
like
thank
you. Like
you
can't just avoid all of the drains.
Much better word for it, and necessary. You can't avoid all the drains. So the question here is, what disproportionately drains you?
Yeah.
And then how do you quarantine that? How do you minimize that drain? You're not going to eliminate it.
Right.
So for example, there are two roads that I can use to go home.
Yeah.
And one of them is got an abundance of traffic on it. Traffic disproportionately drains my soul.
I think that's like common for all humans.
Okay, great. So it's not just disproportionate. So then what we're going to talk about is applicable to everybody. Yes. So what I do is I choose to go the longer route. Because my emotional well-being is healthier.
Yeah.
And I'll take the extra few minutes and go the longer route. So I'm quarantining the drain. Another example is I have a real hard time setting appointment times, it just pulls the life out of me. And so how do I quarantine that? And so I've got a tool that I use to say, hey, pick a time that works for you.
Yeah.
And then folks can grab that.
And
so that way I'm not involved in it. I can empower those that I get to meet with.
That's fantastic.
to do it instead. So, but what are the ways that we can quarantine the drains? I love your wording there on drains are necessary. Like there's things that it's part of life. It's part of leadership. And then, but what are our fills? And here's the crazy thing. When we go through chapters where we are really busy, where the weight of leadership in life is really intense, what's the first thing to go?
The things that fill us up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that we got to actually increase our fills during those chapters of life. And it's counterintuitive.
It is, because if those things can feel superfluous in our life, like, oh, the things that fill me up, like I can go without it today. Mm-hmm. I can go without it tomorrow. And we make the sacrifice because the drains often feel necessary. And the last person we think we need to take care of is ourselves. And have you been in that situation before, or am I just describing myself?
No, so many times. So much so, so frequently that I can actually look at those times and look for themes and say, what's happening, not only what's happening in my life, but the things that fill me. So I'm a competitive runner. One of the things that fills me is running competitively and, you know, having a training program, blah, blah, blah. So if I have not gone for a run within the last 3 days, that tells me I'm not taking care of myself. So there are specific things like indicators, dashboard lights that we can look and say, I haven't done that in a while. That probably means I'm not turning on the faucet of fills and I got a bunch of drains that are happening.
Yeah.
So kind of study and look at what are the common threads in those moments of life that you just described.
So I'm going to sort of extend into a section that I don't know where this is going to go.
Okay.
But I think, at least in my life, there are some things that I trick myself into thinking these are fills. These are things that fill me. But now as we're having this conversation, I'm looking back and realizing like, oh, those don't actually fill me. Like one of them is I love to play chess. And I have some friends who I play it with on my phone. And sometimes I'll feel drained and I'll go, oh, I'm just going to take a few minutes to play chess. But if I do great in chess, fantastic. I feel awesome. If someone like my friend Corey manages to capture my queen, I am no longer filled. I'm filled with rage. So, and very upset.
So would you say what fills you is winning at chess?
But here's what I'm realizing is I think probably for a lot of us, there are things that we turn to that are actually crutches and not true fillings for our souls. There are things that we sort of prop ourselves up with, distract ourselves with, but don't really fill us up. So how, like in your own words, I know I'm again going out into a territory that we haven't thought of yet, but is there a way to tell the difference?
That's a great question. Here's how I would answer that is to dissect fills a little bit more specifically and recognize that we are multidimensional individuals, physical, emotional, mental, spiritual. So to think about what fills us on each one of those dimensions starts to get really strategic about what fills us and why it fills us. So if we look at chess, for example, there's potential fills that are there. One is mental and one is relational, right? Because you do it with other individuals. So if we put it, you know, we could analyze it and say, all right, is it though actually stretching your mental capacity, and is it actually bringing you in good standing and relationship with others? And so, you know, you can answer those inwardly and make a determination of, is that actually a fill or is it a faux fill perhaps? Yeah.
And I think TV is another one of those things that we maybe turn to it too often. And is there maybe something you can say about that? If you turn to a fill too often, does it become detrimental to you?
Again, it depends what the fill is. So you mentioned TV. That's not a fill. That's a symptom of the human energy crisis, really, because we don't have a ton of energy. We get to the end of our day and we're just mental vegetables. And but it's not time to go to bed. And so it's much easier to look for what else is on and just kind of keep flipping. And so that's a way of numbing some kind of either pain or insufficient fill that is in our life.
Okay, I want to get really specific now because you just said that the majority of Americans, majority of people listening are going to turn on the TV tonight, turned it on last night.
Yep.
And you're saying that it's not actually a fill for us.
That's so I'd love to find research that backs that up. But I would look more at what is your motive? What are you craving? What are you looking for? So I'm not going to say TV is a terrible thing, but I am going to say, hey, before you turn it on, why are you about ready to turn on the TV? Now we're talking about self-leadership.
Right.
So that's self-awareness. Let's become self-aware and mindful when we turn on the television of what is about ready to happen. And let's also inventory what we're choosing not to do. So if there's a different fill that perhaps we didn't have time for in our day and we haven't done that, would that bring a greater degree of fill than television would?
Yeah.
The problem is fills take a certain amount of energy
yeah.
to actually engage them. Television doesn't take much energy at all.
Yeah, I mean, that's that question of what am I not doing in order to watch TV or whatever it is a great question. That sort of self-awareness, making some categories of here are the things I'm not doing that could actually be better, really makes you do some examination of your motives and what you're looking to get out of the thing that you're engaging in. Okay, we went off on a tangent.
Okay, there it was.
And if you are watching TV later, you know what? Just ignore everything we said and go have a great time, okay?
People ask me all the time, how do you have time? Because I'm a doctoral student. People ask me, how do you have time for a doctorate? And my answer is...
You don't watch TV.
I don't watch TV.
Yep.
So between 7 and 9, that's when I'm working on my doctorate.
Yeah. Talk about self-leadership. Getting a doctorate is self-leadership. Okay, what makes self-leadership so hard?
I think that self-awareness component makes it so hard because self-leadership requires us to look and to say, okay, I need to know myself and be a student of myself, and that includes the areas where I mess up.
Yeah.
We don't like to admit where we've messed up. That's a really challenging thing for us. And so we skate right over it. We avoid the line of thinking that may result in us needing to take ownership over a mistake or a problem or a choice that we've made that isn't beneficial to us or those around us. We don't want to confront that and we don't want to face those things. But if we look through the lens of, okay, what do I learn from that? How do I improve? What's a different choice I could have made? Now we're a student of ourselves. We're a student of, and now that those choices that we've made that aren't so great, those become opportunities for learning. So it's the paradigm that we look at it with.
Yeah. What are some of, like, self-awareness is a hurdle towards better self-leadership. What are other hurdles? How do we overcome them? Can you name a few more things that make self-leadership hard?
Yeah. Self-leadership is challenging because of the world around us. We live in an emotionally regressed world that is constantly inviting us to regress with them. So symptoms of emotional regression, we love blaming one another.
Yeah.
We love looking for people that think exactly like we do. So we're gonna get constant pressure from those around us to conform to their view or to conform to the choices they're making or that they want us to make a specific choice, that kind of a thing. So it becomes very challenging to stand alone, to lead ourselves to the spot where I'm going to have to say no to this or disappoint this individual because I know that our desires on, and it could be something as simple as where are we going to go to eat, right? I mean, okay, if I say one thing and my wife says a different thing, I'm going to disappoint her perhaps. And so we don't like disappointing other individuals. So that's another reason.
I think. And I think if you're thinking about someone who's possibly on a diet, trying to lose weight, and they're all of a sudden in a group of people who say, where do we want to go to eat? And they choose a restaurant that the person on a diet goes, that's not a great choice for me. And do you have the self-leadership, the self-discipline to say, sorry guys, I'm going to disappoint you and not come along? That's hard.
Yeah.
That's really, really hard. And that's just one example. There's lots of different examples. I mean, growing up, we had these peer pressures all the time. And they've just changed and taken different form as we get older. And so self-awareness, that sort of self-discipline in moments where, you know, the cultural pressure is pulling us away from what we know is right. What's something we can do to become more self-aware?
So one of the things we can do to become more self-aware is to learn what are our personal core values. Mm-hmm. Our personal core values are it's a unique combination, like our fingerprint almost. Mm. When you know what your personal core values are, so this is kind of like your internal operating system. It's the set of priorities that you have that may be kind of underlying all the decisions that you make and the way that then you go about implementing those decisions. So when we know what our personal core values are, it helps us to become more self-aware with the symptoms that we may encounter in life. Hmm. So let me give a little bit of an example for this. So a little while back, I was asked to sign a document. And so this, you know, it was emailed to me and you just click a few clicks and it's signed, right? So, but the problem was I didn't like what the document said. Hmm. I didn't agree with the document. So I proceeded to ghost the person that sent me the document, right? And so I go for a week and I had this underlying anxiety, this underlying stress. And I had no idea what that was about. I was kind of looking, there's not like a stressful decision that I have in life right now or, you know. So I couldn't place it. And then I realized at the end of the week, by not signing this document, I was violating two of my personal core values. Mm. So I've got five, and two of them are genuine and responsibility. Mm-hmm. Well, I was being irresponsible by not signing the document.
Yeah.
And I was not being genuine because I didn't even respond and say, hey, I disagree with the contents of this document.
Yeah.
As soon as I responded with some alternate language that I could sign, I felt the anxiety completely go away.
Hmm.
So it was self-awareness and the tool of my personal core values that I used to determine what is this symptom of anxiety and stress that I've got? What is that about?
Yeah.
And then diagnosed it with my personal core values.
Wow. That's really interesting. Because I imagine that I know that's happened in my life where I've felt this sort of stress and I'm not sure where it's coming from. And I wouldn't be able to put it in words back then, like I would now, but it was a violation of one of my values. So how do you go about determining, forming, shaping, recognizing your own personal core values?
Yeah. It's a kind of a process of discovery.
Okay.
And it's usually when I work with folks on this, I'll guide them on a seven-step journey of discerning those. And we start by looking at, hey, what are some of the mountaintop experiences that you had in life? Where are you? What's happening? What are the inverse of that? What are some of the low points of life? And we see if there's potentially some values that come out that way. We usually look at hey, here's a list of 300 possible values. It's not an exhaustive list. And you start to, you just take a pass at it. Hey, what resonates with you? And then you start to group those together into groupings and you start to say, hey, these are the words that might describe each one of those groupings. And then I invite folks to write a phrase or a sentence that contextualizes that specific word that they've come up with.
Yeah.
So that it's unique to them. So it can be a self-guided process.
Yeah.
But it does take some reflection. It takes some introspection.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I've actually in the process right now of sort of revisiting this and reformulating my personal core values. And one of them is gratitude. And the sentence that I came up with is, I won't take anything for granted.
Amen.
And just that, as I go throughout my life, minute by minute, I don't want to take anything for granted, that everything I have is a gift from God. And I think, man, if I can live that way, I'm going to be the best version of me if I can live that way.
That's great.
And that when I'm not, when I'm taking things for granted, when I'm, you know, then my attitude gets stinky and nobody likes to be around me. And so I realized in me, oh man, if I live this way, I'm the best version of me. So you had said you had five. Mm-hmm. Would you mind sharing them with us?
Happy to. So responsibility and genuine, we already talked about. Another one is stewardship. And another one is development. And the last one is efficiency.
Hmm. Those are very Dave words. I love it, man. That is so you. That's great.
Yep. Thanks.
So are there any simple tools you could tell someone to just start the process of discovering core personal values and how that helps you sort of, because the self-awareness, the self-care, all of that sort of management of leadership of yourself is sort of maintenance. And this, the core values seem really like forward thinking and progress making, if you will.
They're definitely progress making. And at the same time, our personal core values are who we are. So it's not that we're advancing to them. Yeah. We already hold them. And it's this process of discovery. And so you may think through what are those moments when you feel particularly you? What are those moments that you feel particularly strong? You're at your very best. So you just described that. Man, I am at my best when I am living with gratitude. Mm-hmm. So then you look and you say, okay, is that a standard operating procedure in my life? Does that show up repeatedly? Is it a screen and a filter by which I make decisions? Boy, and that's when something becomes when you've identified, okay, I need to move that to the core bucket. Because there's also the bucket of aspirational, right? Because I can have plenty of aspirational values, and I can aim toward that, but it's more of a goal than it is how I go through life.
So there's two sets of values then, aspirational and core?
Just core. I think there's all kinds of things that we could choose as aspirational.
But you'd say really like you should focus on those core personal values, things that are already true of you. And when you're operating with them, you're operating at your best.
Yeah.
That's how you describe it.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so for example, I'll get vulnerable here for a moment. So I'm an individual who enjoys being with people.
Yeah.
Notice that I did not say relationships was on my personal core value. Mm. Now, why is that? Because when push comes to shove and I've got task or a human, too often I'll choose task. So it's probably not core to me. That doesn't mean that I don't enjoy people, that I don't prioritize people. However, it probably isn't core to who I am because I'm not placing relationship as the trump card above efficiency, responsibility, stewardship, development, right? It's genuine. So those are the things that win out in the end.
Yeah.
So we got to be honest with ourselves. Here it is again. Okay. You know, like self-awareness. Self-awareness involves really being honest with the person in the mirror and saying, I would love to say that all of my decisions are made for the betterment of other individuals. Mm. Some of them aren't.
Yeah.
And so I need to recognize that and be honest with it.
Mm. Wow. That's really helpful to just know, being able to say, you know what, this really great thing, that's not me. Not to say that I'm not working towards that, but I know like really down to the core who I am. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So down to the core, I'm a terrible human because I don't like people.
Exactly.
No.
No, but yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying we can, if we're really honest with ourselves, what are the things that are most habitual in our lives that are foundational to who we are more than anything else.
Yeah.
And it means that those are the things that we're going to identify as our core values.
Yeah, that's really helpful. So in the subject of self-leadership, as we're closing up, I think a lot of people struggle with self-doubt. And that becomes one of the greatest enemies for them because they can maybe even know about I should be more self-disciplined or I should be more self, or, you know, all of the things that we've just talked about, I should develop core personal values. But when it comes down to it, they've got this nagging doubt in their head about who they are, what they could be, what they could do, and it holds them back. What would you say to someone who's wrestling, struggling with self-doubt?
Number one, you're normal.
Hmm.
So everybody wrestles with self-doubt. I mean, there's a growing cultural word, imposter syndrome, right? Yeah. I mean, that involves self-doubt. So first of all, it's you're in good company because you're in company with everybody else.
Yeah.
So the next thing I would say is come up with a set of personal truth statements about who you are. So I've got a list of these statements that are in the back of my journal. And anytime I get a new journal, the first thing I put in is I go to the back and I write down all of my belief statements about who I am, truth about who I am. And so that when I'm having these moments of self-doubt, I flip open the back of my journal and I'll read these statements and I'll read them aloud. Hmm. It seems a little weird because here I am alone reading this aloud. But remember, self-leadership is about leading the person in the mirror. So I need to speak audibly to that person in the mirror. Yeah. And so I am a treasure of the Most High God. I have a wife who says that I am her hero. Hmm. I am a developer of people. It's not what I do for a living. It's who I am as a person. These are some of the statements that are in the back of my journal. And they're belief statements of truth. And so we combat these. Another way to describe this is self-doubt is these are lies.
Yeah.
And what do we combat lies with? We combat it with truth.
Yeah.
And so let's have a goat. We're not going to be able to come up with those truth statements when we're in the thick of battle with the lies. So let's come up with them when we're not in that thick of
battle. Yeah, when you're healthy, mm-hmm. when you're positive.
Hmm. Yeah, and then we come up with them then so that we can get them out when those moments of self-doubt present themselves.
Yeah, that's really good. So last thing on self-leadership, if you could tell someone who is maybe weary, burnt out, maybe they don't struggle with self-doubt, but they're just on the edge right now, and what would you tell them to make sure they can keep going?
I would ask, what's the difference between time management and energy management? Because you might be trying to manage your time really, really well, but are you managing your energy really, really well? Mm. So talk to me about the areas of your life where you're recovering. Talk to me about the areas of your life where you took a moment, just a 30-second moment today, and took some deep breaths. That's recovery. Yeah. So we don't grow without stress. So we need to seek stress, but then we also need to bring recovery into our lives. So we talk about it in terms of day off. We talk about it in terms of vacation. Those are the most common notions.
Yeah.
But how are we bringing recovery in throughout our day?
Yeah.
Where we pause between appointments and call a loved one. That's just for 60 seconds. Hearing the voice of a loved one brings more energy than a cup of coffee. And wow. So where is it that we're introducing recovery throughout our day so that we're not on the edge of falling apart? Hmm. And those involve some, so there's recovery to it. And then there's also, let's look at your life and say, are there things there that maybe are incongruent to your values? And are there some things maybe that it's time to say no to?
That's so good. Man, Dave, thank you for that last bit of wisdom, managing your energy, not just your time. And I hope that people are listening and that they'll take all of this and apply it in their lives. In today's podcast, we talked about fills and drains. We talked about self-awareness in self-leadership, and we also talked about core personal values. Dave has supplied a resource for you and for me to use to develop and identify our own core personal values, and you can get that resource at leadershiploop.online. I hope that you make the time to identify and develop your core values. It's incredibly important for your self-leadership. And I hope that you continue to learn, try, get feedback, grow. That's the leadership loop because leaders are learners. We want to keep doing that loop over and over again. Learn, try, get feedback, and grow. I hope you have a wonderful day. I hope that you like and subscribe to this podcast because we've got more content coming soon. And we'll see you on the next one.